This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 1-888-408-6141. That's 1-888-408-6141 or tryzona.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to explore a subject that we haven't touched upon yet, I think, in the entire history of Intelligent Medicine, and it is, I think, a subject of great practicality and importance. The subject is the cough. We're going to talk to the author of Cough Cures. He's a pulmonologist, Dr. Gustavo Ferrer. He's an experienced pulmonologist who is trained both in Cuba and the U.S., and he's founder of the Cleveland Clinic Florida Cough Center. He's president of Intensive Care Experts based in Weston, Florida, and he's an authority on respiratory ailments with more than 20 years of experience. Now, of interest is that in his approach to coughs, he employs every high-tech procedure that is appropriate, but he also is someone who utilizes a more natural approach to coughs. So we're going to approach coughs from a dual perspective. His book is Cough Cures, the Best Natural Remedies and Over-the-Counter Drugs for Acute and Chronic Cough. And so without further ado, here's our guest, Dr. Gustavo Ferrer. Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, Dr. Ferrer.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. So, well, first of all, give us a little bit of background on your experience with dual training in Cuba, where I'm sure they have access to high-tech medical approaches, but because of, you know, perhaps the resource is a little stretched, and maybe there's a little bit more of an emphasis on supporting natural approaches in that country.
That's right. That's right. I actually lived and grew up. I was born and grew up in the hillsides of Guantanamo, Cuba, and you know we are a small town of about 700 people, and we don't have doctors, not even today. And the closest hospital is about 20 plus miles from my hometown, and so most people they're using today, and they're still using natural remedies to treat, you know, those common illness that we have and disease and processes that we have that there are short period of time like cough and back pain and so on. And they've been doing that for many, many years. My grandmother was one of those known, kind of healers or person that knows a lot about the herbs and teas in botanical in my hometown. So I grew up hearing that, seeing that.
Is there a word, a Spanish word for a folk, somebody who's versed in folk remedies? I seem to recall, you know, not quite like a witch doctor, but just sort of like a barefoot doctor. Is there a word like a curandero or something like that?
Curandero, that's absolutely right.
Ah, yeah. So I recall a little bit of my high school Spanish. Very good. Okay.
That's excellent. That's excellent. So that's exactly right. So I grew up hearing that, seeing that, and I went to my med school, and the med school training was entirely Western medical training. But when I finished medicine in Cuba, I went to do internal medicine and then pulmonary medicine. And around that time, the economic issues, the government was somehow forced to reintroduce natural remedies to help, you know, treat the people and help with the crisis. Lo and behold, they launched a lot of research into acupuncture and sent people to China and vice versa. And you know, they dipped down into the herbs and teas and did research. And by the tail end of my pulmonary training, already natural remedies were incorporated into the practice of medicine, just as, you know, regular practice, you know. And it was highly effective, very well accepted for many people. And that's exactly where I got a little bit of background. Then I left and I came to South America to work in a research project with the native Indians of the Orinoco River. Spent a couple of years there. And I also saw the same kind of phenomenon. You know, those tribes that we work with, they've been there for over 4,000 years or so, estimated, and they use a lot of natural remedies and great interaction with nature to fight common disease ailments and so on. So that was another part that I you know, I got exposed to the natural remedies and so on. Then came to America, and I went to my internal medicine training and then fellowship in pulmonary medicine at George Washington University in D.C. You know, and there, when I was more into practice, I realized that many of my patients, they were using remedies, teas and so on, but they were not telling us, the doctors. And so I interpret that as a breakdown in communication, and I began to do some stuff and see if we can bring those natural remedies for the treatment of something that is the number one reason for people going to the hospital, cough. So I left GW and I'm going to the Cleveland Clinic, or came down to the Cleveland Clinic in Florida. And after some time there, I opened a chronic cough center with the intention of introducing all these things that go beyond the conventional medicine. And at that time, we did lots of research into the over-the-counters and the evidence behind them. And we discovered a lot of things. We discovered, you know, most of them that we consume today, they don't have evidence for the use. Mm. In fact, most of the medical organizations are advising not to consume them because of their toxicity, side effects, and because there is not enough evidence to support their use. So this is when we decided to go even deeper into more traditional medicine and remedies that have been used for many, many years. And yes, there is evidence for the use. So we focus primarily on those recommendations that they have research evidence. So in the book, we have over 200 research that we review for all their products and herbs and teas that we advise to use in the book.
Well, great. We're going to do a deep dive on some of that information. But before we get into that, what is a cough? I mean, what's happening from a physiological standpoint when a person, you know, starts that barking sound and feels that tickle in their throat or lungs?
Great question. That's an excellent question. And we have a chapter in the beginning of the book totally dedicated for people to understand why we cough. Cough is actually a defense mechanism. Cough is helping us defend the lungs, and the lungs are the filter, you know, getting the oxygen from the environment and passing that into the circulation. The oxygen doesn't come along. We are inhaling in every breath a multitude of chemicals and toxins and fumes that we don't see. And the lungs are a protector, and their job is, you know, beginning at the nose and going all the way down into the deepest, most part of the lungs, are responsible, the breathing system is responsible for removing and bottling those toxins. So cough is a reflex that helps prevent you know, those toxins from settling into the lungs, and once a virus or bacteria gets into the lungs, their job is actually to get rid of the mucus and the phlegm and so on that it gets accumulated. cough is a reflex, but can also be induced. So a cough has a wider spectrum. Well, it could be from, you know, a parent trying to tell the kids, you know, don't touch that girl, or that girl, don't let that guy touch you. going all the way to, you know, protecting us from developing a pneumonia and so on, or going all the way when the reflex is totally out of control and we develop then cough that interfere with our daily life.
So from that standpoint, you know, some of the medications, standard medications that are used to treat coughs, actually suppress the cough reflex. They knock you out a little bit. They sedate you a little bit. Medications that contain, for example, codeine. So is it possible that in an effort to suppress coughs, we may be interfering with an important defense mechanism and maybe making the problem worse long term?
Oh, well, that's exactly right. So much so that in the last 3 months of last year, the American Academy of Pediatrics put out two publications stating they are strongly advised against all codeine-based over-the-counter remedies for cough and even prescription. Because it put the kids to sleep and not only have, you know, other side effects, but interfere with breathing. Most of these medications, what they do, they suppress the breathing center. So people actually are breathing less, and if they have any problem that obstruct the windpipes, the breathing system, like those people stop breathing at night, the sleep apnea, they get more symptoms and they can get really horrible side effects. Mm-hmm. There is tons of reports of people that have died for the use of those medications. And those are one of the medications that even the American College of Chest Physicians, which is the organization that has all the pulmonologists in America and many members in Europe, over 10,000 people, members of the chest organization, they recommend, the chief editor and the president of the organization have continuously recommend for the last 10 years to remove all the over-the-counters that have codeine base, and they have spoken strongly against that, but they're still there.
Is there ever a time where someone comes to see you, or, you know, perhaps goes to see an ENT, and they get a quick referral to a gastroenterologist, and maybe that's where the problem lies?
Oh, that's another excellent question. And in the book, we have summary tables at the end of each chapter. And when we talk about chronic cough, if we exclude smokers, people that have smoked for a long time or they're actively smoking, if we exclude those patients, we then have in people that cough for more than 6 weeks, the two most common reasons for chronic cough is going to be linked to acid reflux, which is heartburn, and the other one is linked to the post-nasal drip. And sometimes they are combined, they come together, which is by far what I see most of the time today.
So that tickle in the throat may come from above, or it may come from below, or in some cases both.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. Most people, you know, when it's not entirely clear, it's combined. Most people, we ask them specific questions about looking at diet-related issues and response to heartburn and tickle in the throat and so on, we can easily define that it could be related to acid reflux. By far, the two most common reasons for chronic cough and in America today, this, you know, besides smoking, are linked to things that we have we have put into our daily life in the last 50 to 100 years. Number one is diet related. We eat more soda based. We drink a lot of stuff that have a low pH, very acid, and all of that is creating a tremendous problem. Plus, the diet is not the ideal So all that is our bodies are responding to that. And when it comes to the post nasal drip, we're talking about, you know, we live in air conditioning air or, you know, heater system in the wintertime that dried up the nasal passages, and then we lose those defense mechanisms that begin with humidifying the nasal passages. So we lose that, and then we open the doors to developing dripping and rhinosinus problems.
When is a cough a sign of something worse, like asthma, for example?
Excellent questions. We put those in. We have a chapter dedicated to or a section in the book, specifically with a table when we teach patients to understand when a cough is a little more serious and they need to see somebody. If the person is a smoker for many years, of course we got to pay attention because chronic bronchitis is an issue. Also, it could be more serious than that. It could be in small percentage or in a good number, depending if that they are a smoker. Cancer is still a big problem in America today, and also asthma. Unfortunately, asthma is a combination of environmental plus exposures to not only pollution, but also smoking and all the same theory behind the air conditioning and mold. And for some reason, we're seeing more and more asthma than we used to see in the past, and primarily children. So when people developed cough that is persistent beyond 2 to 3 weeks, and they still have not only the cough, but they develop cough that is associated with wheezing, with a wheezing sound in the chest, or cough that is associated with shortness of breath, or cough that is associated with persistent fever. Those are red flags that need to be taken care of. Or people coughing up blood is another red flag that definitely has to be addressed.
Should people who have a simple cough run to get an X-ray, or is that overkill?
Unfortunately, it's overkill. We do more X-ray than anybody else in the whole world, and we have it readily available, and we tend to react quickly and get an X-ray. In the book, we also talk about that, only if you have very persistent cough that is beyond 2 to 3 weeks, and a cough that is associated with other symptoms that are red flags, as we mentioned, the coughing up of blood and so on.
Or a fever, symptoms, perhaps, yes, or something like that. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But other than that, unfortunately, we get way too much X-rays, and that is being off something, there is an issue today in the countries, in medical circles, and regulatory circles. They are talking a lot about that because you get false images that end up getting CAT scans and CAT scan. Fine.
One thing leads to another.
Always.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
And then to another. And when we stop, because if you have that kind of issue when you are 20, then you may have 40 years of getting more X-ray, totally unnecessary, you know?
Mm-hmm. There's some new think on the subject of bronchitis. You know, it used to be said, well, you know, if you have a cold, obviously that's a virus, and maybe you have a cough, but as long as you're coughing up, white stuff, that's normal. But once you start coughing up yellowish or greenish stuff, that's bronchitis. Of course, it could be pneumonia, but usually just a garden variety bronchitis. But bronchitis used to be an indication for giving antibiotics because it is a bacterial infection. And yet, like some other bacterial infections, like chronic ear infections in kids, there's some debate as to whether antibiotics even make a difference in run-of-the-mill ordinary bronchitis.
That's an excellent question. Today we know that viruses can and will produce in people that develop bronchitis very much similar symptoms that any bacteria. We can have green mucus coming out. We can have similar changes because the mucus is the result of the lining, the mucosa lining of the breathing system is peeled off And that creates that green, stuffy, gray color mucus. So today we know by, there are many epidemiological studies that have shown that by far most of the acute cough are viral, and most of the acute bronchitis are viral. So, today, NPR has a report about the World Health Organization calling again to do something because we don't have antibiotics in the pipeline. We have more resistant antibiotics than bacteria to antibiotics than ever, and we foresee or the World Health Organization, most organizations foresee that we are facing kind of apocalyptic times in terms of antibiotics, that we're not going to have tools to fight against common bacteria. So we see today that there is a growing number of people getting complicated, simple procedures, you know, appendectomies, getting complications from C-sections, complicated with resistant bacteria. That was not the case many years ago. So we definitely have to do something. And if we looked into the behavior of overusing antibiotics, 7 out of 10 times that anybody goes to a doctor with an acute cough will get an unnecessary antibiotic.
Yeah, it's pretty much, and this is so pervasive, even though the science is there and the studies by experts like you suggest that it may be just an exercise in futility with potential side effects. A lot of doctors reflexly meet consumer demand. You know, as people come in and say, "Doc, give me something," and coin of the realm is a prescription pushed across the table.
And that is exactly right. Unfortunately, you know, here local in South Florida, I know a very well-known pharmacist in a local college that she is an ongoing research looking into, and this has been published as well before, but she's going a little bit deeper into the publication, into the matter, looking into doctors' behavior when they are prescribing antibiotics. And by far, 9 out of 10 doctors that they have interviewed, they know that they should not give it, but they believe that they should do something for the patients, and even when they don't have evidence, because they find that there's nothing out there or anything else to give. And this is one of the things that I enjoy talking everywhere. There are, and that's the reason we put the book together, so to show them that there are good alternatives that could be, should be used and would help us fight this battle.
Okay, well, that's an excellent introduction to our subject, the subject of cough cures, the best natural remedies and over-the-counter drugs for acute and chronic cough, in part two with today's guest, Dr. Gustavo Ferrer, a pulmonologist with experience, cross-cultural experience in both high-tech medicine and also some exposure to folk medicine. We're going to explore the potential benefits of natural approaches to coughs. Also, we'll be taking a look at some of the OTC remedies and whether they deliver what they promise in part two. So stay with us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.